Hey, it's Craig. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Canadian History X early and ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Greetings and welcome to another episode of Canadian History X. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can for $3 a month. Just go to patreon.com/CanadaEHX. You can also donate to the podcast by going to CanadaEHX.com and clicking donate. Don't forget, I have two other podcasts out there, Pucks and Cups and From John to Justin, which you release on all podcast platforms every single week. Years ago, I used to live in a place called Rosslyn, British Columbia, and it was there that I first heard the story of the Doukhobors. I heard it again when I lived in Saskatchewan, but I think a lot of people around Canada don't know the story of the Doukhobors. And that's why books like Our Backs Warmed by the Sun, which was written by Vera Maloff, are so important, because they tell that story. They tell the story about the Doukhobors being imprisoned and interned, and they tell the story about the people who came to Canada and helped change the fabric of the nation. So I'm going to get right to my interview with Vera. She wrote this book. It's a fantastic book. It's available online, and I will include a link for it in my show notes. So let's get right to it. I really enjoyed the book. It was a really, really good read. Before I went to BC and settled in Rosslyn, I didn't know about the Doukhobors, and I think that might be quite common for anybody kind of outside of British Columbia and that region. So kind of the first question is, what inspired you to write the book?
Well, I grew up with my grandfather. My grandparents lived next door. And he was such a passionate man about, about peace and justice, making the world a better place. And I knew his history. He had participated in many peace marches during his time. He was very passionate about making the world a better place. Mm-hmm. And at that time, in the 1920s and 30s, he actually led a group of people to protest against. For instance, he protested against taxes being used for war. And then what happened to him, I felt was really unjust, because he served many years in jail for basically a peaceful march down Baker Street, 6 months the first time, the second time, 3 years in a maximum security prison. And it was unjust. Mm-hmm. And also, he was such a charismatic person that people just flocked to him. And he had a lot of stories to tell. Mm-hmm. And it was a good story too. It's something that needed to be written.
Without a doubt, for sure. Was the process of research, was it difficult? Or your mother, who I believe has turned 100 years old last year, was she a great resource for all of this information from the 1920s, the 1930s?
No, she was absolutely amazing, because she had a wonderful memory for, names, events, places, and just like her father, and she could tell those stories in detail. And some of the stories she told me were absolutely incredible. It was hard to believe they took place in British Columbia and Canada at the time. So I wanted to research and check the accuracy of all this. And I went to Selkirk College, to UBC Library, and also to the Nelson Touchstone's archives that had all the archives of the newspapers of the day. And those newspapers in that day are amazing. They provide such detail of what happened. As you know, in the book, when I researched this, I thought, wow, this is really incredible what kind of detail. They don't do that in newspapers of the day, it seems.
Yeah, they don't do that anymore. I used to work in newspapers, and we certainly don't go into detail as much as we used to.
It was amazing. Mm-hmm. They provided lots of information.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted my book to be accurate and historical. And that's another reason I really dug into, you know, accounts from my mother's point of view, her siblings' point of view, and also what the newspapers of the day said, mm-hmm. and other people. So to make it accurate.
It was very good. When we look at the Dukhobor internment, obviously most Canadians know about the Japanese Canadian internment of World War II, and really any kind of internment is a terrible thing. But is the Dukhobor internment, is just something that's kind of been forgotten in Canada, except in regions like where you are, in the Kootenays, where it was a big part of the history?
Well, I think that the internment of the Sons of Freedom children in the 1950s and beginning in the 1960s was quite a bit in the newspapers of the time. I mean, the shameful, sad pictures of children kissing their parents through the fence. That's the only way they could see each other and touch each other. I think that was in the news, but what is in the 1920s and 30s, what happened to my grandparents' generation, that was forgotten, wasn't spoken about. And it wasn't spoken about by my mother either, because it was just too traumatic and they wished to forget it and carry on with their lives. And so I wanted to write about that and bring that out because it was forgotten. And you're right, out of this region, people don't know that much about Dukhobor. So what they do is mostly what they hear maybe about Sons of Freedom sect that you did use some burning and disrobing to tell their story, but the story didn't get clear. It was sensationalized just because of the disrobing and the burning. Mm-hmm. And the story behind it didn't get told. So I wanted to do that.
Mm-hmm. I believe today is 1899. On this day was when the first group of Dukhobors arrived in Halifax. And then obviously they travel across the country. They settle in various places like Saskatchewan and BC. When we look back at the Dukhobors, what kind of impact have they had on Canada, do you feel, on our history?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, they were pioneers in the areas they settled. They came to Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Alberta. They developed the land there. They developed farms, villages. They actually set up like telephone systems in that day, which was amazing. Roads and railroads, and they built sawmills and brick factories, flour mills. So they helped pioneer Canada at that time. And then later on, I feel that they helped with other pacifists, of course, Mennonites, Hutterites, some Norwegian sects. They helped develop a pacifistic belief in Canada. There was a ground, like sort of a ground breaking belief that perhaps peace is the way to solve situations, a dialogue rather than going to war. Yeah, I think that was part of it. And also I wanted to mention the Selkirk College Peace and Justice Program that Dukhobor's, it's based on Dukhobor idealism. Mm-hmm. And that's quite an active program. People come from all over the world to study in that program.
One really cool thing I liked about your book was when you were looking at the history of your family, and especially because they were down in California and moving up into Canada, they came across some very prominent individuals. I think Leo Tolstoy's son, your grandfather knew. And then there was the doctor whose name unfortunately escapes me, who was kind of like a herbalist doctor. He lived to like 100 or something like that. So your grandfather knew him. And then I believe it was your great grandfather knew Gandhi, or somebody in the family knew Gandhi. Right.
Father did. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Was it cool to find out these cool connections to some major people in history?
Mm-hmm. It was really cool. It wasn't a huge surprise, because when I was growing up with my grandfather, I was in charge of going to get the mail at the post office, and I'd carry home big bundles of letters and journals. And he had the biggest mailbox in the Thrums post office. And, you know, they would be from all over the world. And also, he was quite an outgoing character. He wasn't afraid of approaching people and talking to them. So he corresponded and met with pacifists and vegetarians and philosophers from all over the world. But for instance, when he was in California, he approached, the philosopher, oh, now what is his name? It was a doctor, anyway, his name escapes me, but he met all these people and just, you know, would, through connections, he would get invited to their places and talk to them. And they were, because he was a Duke of Bor, I think that also opened doors for him. And then, for instance, Gandhi, he just wrote to him and he wrote back. And yes, that was pretty amazing.
Yes.
And then at home, so that was through his correspondence. Amazing, like in this day, it would be through the internet. And though in that day, it was through writing letters and through the post office. But also people came to him and visited him at home. And, you know, people like the one that wrote the Back to the Land movement, they came and visited and he met people that way. So it was pretty, it was pretty amazing.
And then a lot of people escaping the draft in the United States during the Vietnam War as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was on sort of like the railway line and people would stop in and they'd stay a while. They'd, you know, grandparents would feed them and they'd, you know, counsel them, talk to them. And they were sort of, he felt that the draft resistors were sort of the conscience of America and he helped him out whichever way he could. Mm-hmm. Some of them lived with our family for several months. And some of them, he directed them, for instance, to Argenta further down the valley where they stayed with the Quaker families. Mm-hmm. So some in the Slocan Valley with other Dukabur families.
It was a cool addition into the book to add the I don't want to call them draft dodgers, but the people who were escaping the draft, especially the one guy who came in and your grandfather kind of thought he had a whole bunch of girlfriends, and then later in the book you kind of write that after you interviewed him, you know, he's saying like, well, no, it was only like these three people and they were kind of just friends. And it was kind of nice to catch up with him so many years after he had interacted with your family.
Yeah, that was sheer luck because I wanted to connect with Len Walker, but was not able to. And then finally, when I met a fellow draft resistor, he was able to use the internet and find a mailing address. So I mailed him and he sent a letter back saying, wow, he doesn't get mail often anymore, but he remembered the Maloff family and my grandfather very well. And in fact, when he was helping in Sri Lanka, he remembered that grandfather suggested that he go there. Mm-hmm. And he dedicated the book he wrote about Sri Lanka to grandfather partly. So yeah. I thought that was amazing that 50 years later, he still remembered him very well. He was still sort of like a mentor to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a really nice part of the book that I quite enjoyed. We kind of talked about the Duke of Bor internment and being remembered, but why do you feel like you said, especially in the 1920s, 1930s, why more Canadians don't know a lot about the Duke of Bors, the Duke of Bor movement, even just the immigration of the Duke of Bors?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I've read about the time when the Duke of Bors came to Canada, it was in the newspapers and Canada welcomed them wholeheartedly. And then in the 20s and 30s, when they were being incarcerated, what happened, I know Nancy, her name is hard to pronounce, She's written in the back of my book. She's a professor in the Department of History and University of Calgary. And she believes that because the Dukobors are really marginalized because, first of all, they were objecting to war and wanted to be pacifists during the World War I, World War II, when it was very unpopular to do that. And also that it was seen as very unpatriotic. And then also they lived together communally and they were seen, that was sort of equated with communism. Mm-hmm. And communism was, the evil of that time, evil against democracy. Even though they weren't communists, but that's what they were seen as. So yeah, but it does still surprise me that the Japanese internment is spoken about. Mm-hmm. So I think partly it's because the Dukobors did not write many of their own stories, and so that's what I'm glad to write my story about my family and their experience.
Kind of leads into my next question then. What do you hope people get out of reading your book?
I hope that they develop an understanding of the Dukobors, what they sort of suffered. That it took a long time for the Dukobor story to come out. It took perseverance and they have to see beyond what the headlines were, because I know even now the headlines could totally distract one from the truth about things. Let's say the immigrants coming in today. The headlines of that time were about the Sons of Freedom sect, and they did not talk about the other groups of Dukobors, the community Dukobors, the independent Dukobors that were not using protesting violently. They were protesting peacefully. And that developing, thinking about developing peaceful means to solve problems. Many people, even some teachers, I was a teacher and in the Slocan Valley, and I've talked to some of my teacher friends, and they said they wished they had read this book before they taught in the Slocan Valley, because it made them understand the families so much more. Understand what happened there. And also people have started to research their own history and write some of that down. So that's been a sort of a blessing. People have phoned me and talked to me and says, this has really inspired me to write my family story. And I'd like to get more information. I'm lucky my mother lived to 100, so I still could talk to her, but some of theirs, it's harder to get the information and piece it together.
That's definitely a bonus, having your mother who lived through so much of it and with such a great memory, especially because she was remembering like conversations and things like that. And I can barely remember what I said last week, let alone 80 years ago. So that was a really great part of the book. In regards to people reading the book, what's the response been like? Have a lot of people kind of said that they really enjoyed it? Like you said, people have been getting in touch and saying that it's inspired them to research their own history.
Mm-hmm. Well, for instance, some people have been filling in missing pieces. I don't know if journalists, Greg Nesteroff, he's contacted me and said, oh yes, this Spokane Valley tennis court is something that I'm researching also. And I haven't been able to find it, but I do know where the telegraph office was in Spokane at that time. And he told me that. Another person, it was really interesting, just the other day, a friend contacted me and said, there is a story in the book about my great grandmother and how she had her portrait painted by Dr. Christie's wife in Trail. And she contacted Dr. Christie's daughter and she asked, where has this portrait gone? It'd be so amazing to have that portrait, because the daughter said this was the best portrait that her mother ever painted. And she was like, I searched for it. So just things like that. And people, I'm really pleased that I wrote sort of an unbiased story of the Dukobors, one from a family of Dukobors that experienced a lot.
And I guess the last question is, what can we learn about the Duke of Boers and their experiences? They've held firm to their beliefs. They went through great adversity, especially in the early 20th century, and kept persevering and prospering. So what can we learn from them?
Yeah, well, for instance, I think the Duke of Boer creeds, they're based on Christian and universal principles, like toil and peaceful life. Simple things like treating others as one wishes to be treated oneself, respecting a spark of God within each person, and thou shalt not kill. That's a major tenet of all Christian beliefs, and Duke of Boers exemplified it. And they continued to exemplify it and persevere with that, even though they were sent to jail for asking that the taxes be directed toward peaceful means rather than to military So I think just those simple principles are something that people could learn and stay to. I mean, I think our country does believe in those principles. They just have to show them, exemplify them in the politicians and things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I did wanted to add one more thing.
Sure, of course.
My mother was very instrumental in getting all the information, but also my grandfather wrote a book, and it was amazing to read his story. And I used a lot of his book as a resource material for what I wrote too. So I'm hoping to get that book published in English. Right now it's published in Russian. And of course, many people don't read the Russian anymore.
No.
So, yeah, I think that was an amazing resource. It just brought my grandfather's thoughts and his ideas and his passion forward for me, because I still could read Russian going to school, in Russian school evenings. That helped.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Vera Mailoff. And if you did, please leave a rating and review. If you like, you can email me at craig@canadaehx.com. You can visit my website, where you'll find hundreds of articles on Canada's history, as well as all my podcast episodes. Just go to canadaehx.com. And again, you can support the podcast for as little as $3 a month. Just go to patreon.com/canadaehx, just like all of these wonderful patrons have. And I apologize if I mispronounce any names. Lori Ann Kirby, Gary Dolovich, Nick Zinri, Pamela Elder, Shannon Marshall, Clinton Martinez, Dimitri Chauve, Aaron O'Hara Myers, Robert Dunseith, Todd Casey, Catherine Roa, Luke S., Vic Hedges, JP Bear, Jason Hall, Phil Maynard, Spencer M., and Iris Gray. As well, you can find me on Facebook. Just search for Canadian History X. Remember, that's EHX. I'm on Twitter. My handle is Craig Baird, CraigBaird. And don't forget, you can find me on Instagram. Just search for Bairdo37. Thanks. We'll see you again next time.
I'm not just a pawn in this game.
3 nights a week on Global.
They're putting targets on their back. Massive.
Drama.
I guess you could say I'm in a showman.
They're just so in love and so annoying. Enough.
Betrayal.
The guy just put up his best friend now.
And plot twists.
What is happening right now?
You'll never see coming.
If you're coming for me,
this is perfect.
I'm coming for you then.
It'll be a battle.
Like, it'll be war.
Big Brother Canada. All new Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays on Global. Stream on Stack TV.